this process, there's a lot fewer gas stations than there used to be. And a lot of properties that used to have gas stations on them have gone through this process and are being redeveloped. So the owners of the property recognize there is contamination in the ground. They cannot sell that property because it has this liability attached to it. And they actually, the way the laws are written, they can't sell that liability. So if they sell that land to somebody, someone else is going to take that land and do things with it. But the liability always belongs to the person who caused the contamination. And often that is more than one party. Often it's the operator of the gas station and it's the oil company that sold them the gasoline, and it could be other parties. So this mechanism sort of creates a pause in development. Gas stations are commonly ones that the pause can be lengthy because generally those properties belong to large oil companies. Large oil companies have a lot of money and they can afford to sit on an asset for a little while. If it was a mom-and-pop piece of property, mom-and-pop don't have a bunch of money and they want to get value out of that property. So they're motivated through the process to get it cleaned up and to resell it and to get whatever money they can out of the property.
But of course, there's the optics of creating a temporary garden. Corporations are concerned with the public relations aspect of community gardens. But eventually, they will take those resources away.
I think there's a good PR incentive for the property owner, especially if it's a larger company that can say this is an amenity we're giving to the community or lending to the community. The one concern I think they would have is once you create a public space, it's very difficult to take that public space away again. If people become accustomed to this place being a community garden or a public park or a gathering space, then it's going to be very difficult 10 years down the road to tell the public, well, actually, you were just borrowing it, and now we're going to put a condo on this site. So I think that the property owners are aware of that concern. And I think there's a potential that the goodwill they get in the short term for help letting people use this space may be eroded by the eventual bad will they'll get when they have to take that space away because they can't let that multi-million dollar asset just disappear.
So for Howard, managing a plot in a community garden isn't really about community at all. It's about space.
I mean, there's ideologies around what a community is. I'm not that crazy about the ideas that are organized in this space.
Do you think that other people find community here?
Certainly the thieves that walk in here have a sense that there is community here, and it's so accessible that that's a negative aspect of community. For me, this is a space to come and rest and relax and restore myself, and the food is an incredible bonus.
So, temporary community gardens aren't as idyllic as they may appear. Short-term projects can have long-term consequences, and it's important to acknowledge that corporations aren't building them solely for community goodwill. And often communities aren't as invested as corporations want them to be. At the end of the day, communities can't be invented by companies, as hard as they try.
For me, it's magical when you open up the hive and you hear instantly. You open the hive and you hear just the roar. It's like something's going on. What's going on? They'll line up along the frame and they'll look at you. And it's like, oh, it's just this guy. So they'll go back to their work. But the smells and the sounds that come out, it's very intoxicating to me. I get lost in that world.
Beekeeping. Over the past decade, it's exploded in popularity in urban spaces across North America. Canadian cities are changing bylaws and regulations to make it easier for residents to set up backyard or community garden beehives. Vancouver especially has embraced beekeeping in a big way. City Hall even has a few beehives on its roof. So why all the buzz? Is it all about the honey? Is it to combat the declining bee populations? Or is there something more?
People have realized that we need the pollinators to create the food that we eat. I think the phrase is 1 in 3 bites of our food is due to the pollination by a pollinating insect. And people are aware that honeybees, native pollinators, are at risk, and they are at risk possibly because of the chemicals that are used both in agriculture and by the beekeepers in their hives. My name is Julia Common, and I'm the chief beekeeper for Hives for Humanity. I'm also a beekeeper, and I have been a beekeeper since I was 21, and I'm about 65 now.
In 2011, Julia and her daughter, Sarah Common, brought a single beehive into the Hastings Folk Garden. By 2012, they had started Hives for Humanity, a nonprofit aimed at strengthening community in the downtown East Side through beekeeping.
And I entered the downtown East Side with all sorts of preconceived notions of that the people would be aggressive, that the bees would be at risk, also that the bees would not find enough to eat. But in fact, all of these ideas I had were completely wrong. And we've now grown from that one colony in the Hastings Folk Garden to over 250 colonies throughout downtown and also out in Delta.
Hives for Humanity runs beekeeping workshops and community outreach programs across downtown Vancouver. They also sell their products, such as honey and candles, out of their downtown East Side headquarters, Bee Space, which doubles as a year-round community center.
We recognize the therapeutic value that the bees bring, and we have found that people, when they work with the bees, they feel calm. And then also through the bee space, we've been able to offer a place where people can gather throughout the year, not just during the bee season, and all sort of within that culture of the hive, which is to look after one another. How can I support you? What do you need? The bees have helped us to be a stronger community.
I spoke with someone from the downtown East Side community who's been working with Hives for Humanity since 2012.
My name is Ian Smythe, and I've been working with Hives for Humanity for 6 years. They moved bees into my building. The paper comes under my door, and I think, oh, they're moving bees into the building. It's like, okay, so I'll get involved with this, even though I'm allergic to bees. I'll go give it a shot anyways. Was beekeeper, still am, candle maker, workshop facilitator, teacher. So, you know, pretty much those were my roles that I've had. Working with the bees is kind of like Tai Chi for me, because, you know, just slow, fluid movements, and, you know, you gotta have that focus, and you gotta be in the moment, because if you're not, the bees will let you know. Working with the bees and the people in the downtown East Side, it's really opened my eyes to the downtown East Side. I lived down here for 20 years, and I was one of the people who looked down on these people who lived down here, myself included. And then I realized that after a while, and meeting people, I was like, yeah, you know what? We're all broken down here, but that doesn't mean we're bad people. Same as a beehive, how the beehive have individual bees, there's still the hive on a whole. It's considered like one entity with million billion parts to it, and that's kind of how we operate here the same way. You know, we're one community, but we all operate independent of each other.
With all this talk about bees, I thought it was only right that I get my hands in a hive. So I visited Daniel, an experienced beekeeper, and his daughter at their backyard beehive in East Vancouver.
Well, so right now they're basically just coming out of the winter. So they're trying to collect as much pollen as possible in order to start the egg laying cycle. Right up the center column you have the eggs, slightly on the sides of that, on each side presumably you have the pollen, and on the outside and upside of that you have the honey. It's really, for me, in terms of the bees, why I keep them is more just that it's ultimately a hobby. And yeah, I derive a lot of pleasure just doing this, just sitting here and interacting with them. And I'm not in this for any type of monetary aspects. In terms of, I don't yield any great gains from the honey sales or anything like that. I just have these because I enjoy the act of beekeeping, and also just for the kids. You know, we got a lot of kids in the neighborhood, and they come here and you know, they get to poke their hands in the honey and they get to, you know. Yeah, you get to taste the honey, that's right.
Yeah. Hey, Lee, you want
to
try some?
Yeah, I'd love
to. Put your pinky in there.
So good.
So good.
Wow. Oh, it's amazing. Thank you.
No problem. Mm.
Daniel's fresh from the hive honey was delicious. But the wonders of urban beekeeping don't stop at honey. Urban beekeeping also presents intriguing possibilities for scientific research. To help explain this, I spoke with a member of a UBC team that's been studying both the bees and the honey from the downtown beehives of Hives for Humanity.
My name is Kate Smith, and I am a doctoral student here at the Earth, Oceanic, and Atmospheric Sciences Department at UBC.
Under the supervision of, and in collaboration with, Dr. Dominique Wise, Kate has been using urban bee and urban honey samples to map pollutants in downtown Vancouver.
So we don't test for organics, like drugs or pesticides or anything like that, but we can test for heavy metals because it's an inorganic chemistry lab. This branch of geochemistry, which they call it urban geochemistry, and it's really, really emerging because just the population of Earth is exploding. And problem with that is that you have to have the infrastructure to support people, but the infrastructure fails so fast. And so every time something rusts or breaks down or gets torn down, you are just releasing so many heavy metals into the environment, and you have to think about where they go. The cool thing about bees is that it's literally a crowdsourced thing. It's crowdsourced in the sense that the bees do all of the sampling for us, because the bees, they spend a lot of time in the air, they land in water, and they land on dry surfaces too. And they're physically designed to pick up particulates, whether it's aerosols in the air, or pollen, which is what they want to be picking up, or urban dust, wherever they land. So they conveniently sample everything for us. And then the honey, since bees have a foraging radius of only 2 to 3 kilometers, it's like a hyperlocal geochemical fingerprint that they prepare for us in their honey, which is cool.
Although it's seen a recent spike in popularity, it's clear that urban beekeeping is not just a fad. And given the increasing urbanization of the world, it's likely to only become more important in years to come. This has been an audio piece by Leland Joyce, with music by Blue Dot Sessions. Special thanks to Julia and Sarah Common, Ian Smythe, Daniel Jensen, and Kate Smith. For more information on Hives for Humanity, visit hivesforhumanity.com.
Thanks so much for listening to stories created by students in LFS 400 Audio Storytelling. To hear more stories and for more information about the course, visit lfs400.landfood.ubc.ca and enjoy the rest of 24 hours of student power.
Hey babes, you're listening to Love 101, an empirical approach to love on CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. I'm your host, Isa, and I firmly believe that everyone has something to say about love. If you're new here, I created this show after taking a 100-series course on love in my first semester of college, so I figured that makes me enough of an expert. Also, I'm 18 and I've never been in love. Anyway, today we'll be talking online dating. Does it work? Is it just a product of the capitalistic hellscape that seeks to generate profit from selling us a false sense of intimacy in our isolated existence? Is it ruining love as we know it? Is there any hope for the rest of us? I set out to find the answer to these questions through interviewing two frequent dating app users, Alex DeBoer and Eloise Ofray. But first, let's hear what wisdom the masses have to impart. And by that, I mean the lovely people I managed to corner outside the station. Enjoy.
Are you on any dating apps, or have you been on any dating apps?
No, I'm not.
Yes, I have. I've been on Tinder and Bumble.
Briefly on Tinder.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Do you think it's possible to find love on these dating apps?
So I actually just did like my project on dating apps, and what we found was they're not good for long-term relationships. They're really good for people who are looking for like casual ones, because there's so many people with different goals when they're on there, and it's just hard to find like the right match because the algorithm's not good enough, basically. Like, our project was about this, yeah.
I wouldn't say it's impossible. I would say it's difficult, but you could still find someone that you could like you resonate with, but not. I feel like it would take longer to get into something serious than if you met in person.
I think it's possible. Never say never.
My boyfriend now I met on a dating app. For somebody like me, I don't go out very much, and I work at a place with like all females, and I don't really talk to people at school. So it was like an easier way to meet people, I guess. Yeah.
Do you have any like tips or recommendations for someone trying to find love on a dating app?
Don't settle, because whatever you think you're settling for on the profile, it's even worse in real life.
So yeah, opinions seem to be divided as always, and before we dive deeper into the magical world of dating apps, here's a carefully curated ad and PSA.
Feeling lost in the lonely, meaningless cyber web? Looking to connect with other users? Then plug in to a CITR collective. Meet users who are compatible with your interests and passions. CITR's mainframe offers 9 unique collectives: news, arts, accessibility, sports, persons of color, indigenous, gender empowerment, LGBTQ2SIA+, and music affairs. CITR collectives are where you can make great radio, great friends, and avoid the abject loneliness of life in the cyber void.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Welcome back. You're listening to Love 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. So this turned into a Frankenstein's monster of a show. You see, I sat down with my friend Eloise on her couch one night and recorded our conversation on a field recorder, which would account for the weak audio, but nevertheless, I found our conversation quite illuminating. The week before that, I had just interviewed Alex DeBoer, spoken word coordinator at CATR, about her thoughts on dating apps. I start out asking my guests for their credentials on love. This is Alex.
I have been in love. I've seen some things.
And this is Eloise.
So my resume, you could sum it up to, I had like 4, not say committed, but like boyfriend relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then after that, I had sex.
So I picked these two friends of mine to interview because I thought they would have interesting things to say. And at the time of recording, these two were using Tinder for very different reasons. First, let's hear Eloise's reason.
What is your purpose to be on
dating
apps? You just said it.
The purpose is to fuck. Like, we're not. Yes. Okay. Actually, no. Yeah, it is to fuck.
And now for Alex.
People ideally meet organic ways, right? Where you actually get to know someone and then you like them for who they are, versus like seeing someone's photo and their interests and considering that they might align with you and then trying to pursue that. Like, it's not a very organic way, but it seems harder to meet people maybe as you get older too. Like, I'm obviously older than you, and I kind of hang out with my friends. I go to similar like events, a lot of like local music shows or like events, news events, stuff to do with my work. And it's kind of a similar circle of people I surround myself with. So I do find it hard to meet new people, I guess, in a meaningful way.
Well, how long have you been on Tinder?
Okay. On and off for, I'd say, like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
like when I first went on Tinder, I was very like anxious about it, and I like didn't, you know, meet up and go on a date with anyone for like 6 months. Like it was just like, like the thought of that was so frightening. But as time went on, you just like become desensitized to it a bit, and you realize it doesn't matter as much. And also, like, it's pretty normal and healthy to like want to date people or like want to meet new people. And what was the thing we were talking about?
We talked about vulnerability and how, like,
yeah,
it feels embarrassing and shitty to like have other people know that you want to be loved. Like, it's yeah. almost easier to talk about like, oh, you want to sleep with this person versus like, oh, you have a need to be you want to be emotionally understood.
Mm-hmm. And I think something you said that was really interesting about that is that even on Tinder, mm-hmm. like on dating apps, people still play it cool. They're yeah. like, low key, I'm on here, I don't really care. It's like, you're on Tinder.
Yeah,
like
you want something. App.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they play it so cool. Like yeah. people, so like, I think that even like when you match with people, there's definitely still like a power dynamic there, and like people are still afraid to put themselves out there and message you or whatever.
Now, if you know anything about dating apps, it's that nowadays there's a plethora to pick from. I ask Alex and Eloise about the differences. Are you on any other dating apps?
I have been on Bumble. I don't think it's really much better.
While Alex personally wasn't a fan of Bumble, Eloise had a different experience.
So I have a Tinder account. I have a Bumble account. I use the Bumble way more than the Tinder one. I think it's a better user experience. I met more people on Bumble. The thing with Tinder is like, first, it's kind of like an establishment. Like, everybody know what Tinder is. Mm-hmm. Tinder is kind of like the brand name for like dating apps. Mm-hmm. Like, the way it functions is really simple. It does not help the users to like make this step ahead.
If I were to go back on dating apps, would you recommend I go on Tinder or Bumble? Why?
I would say Bumble. I would say Bumble for the way the profiles are constructed. On Bumble, usually they invite you to answer to 3 questions. You can like choose. So it gives like starting points of the conversation. The fact that you will not receive endless messages of boys being like, hey, 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 hey. Or it's like, oh, so hot, I want you to slit my throat with a katana. And this is not something I made up. This is something I received on Tinder.
As someone who hasn't really gone on dates from dating apps, I asked Eloise for her advice.
Unless you're super interesting, you're not the only person, because you know that you're not the only person your match is talking to, because it's a dating app. Mm. So yeah, for me, I like to like talk for like 1-2 days and maybe like start planning stuff. Mm. Like, oh, we should do this, blah blah blah. Because what's the point of like talking for 2 weeks with someone, and when you meet in real life, you're like, oh wow, you're a lame ass person. See?
No, yeah, I totally get that. Well, when you date, like, what kind of activities are you propositioning?
I usually ask what they're comfortable with. I really like going to a bar, have a few drinks, and, like, just talk. For me, it's really important to be in an environment where you can talk easily, and you don't have to make a lot of reflection about, like, oh, what do I want to eat? Like, where should we go? Blah, 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 blah. So I kind of often go to, like, the same bars, just to accommodate everybody, like depending on where they live, etc. But yeah, just make sure like, you're doing something where you have like the capacity to talk and hear your match, and usually it's good. I think like I guess like it's really a classical thing like that people do, just like go for drinks. I don't know about you, like if you ever had like dates on a dating app that was something else than like going for drinks.
I am 18.
That's why I said in a dorm room.
All right, so jokes about underage drinking aside, I still wanted her opinion on whether or not I could find love on a dating app. Do you think it's possible to find love on a dating app, and how would that work?
But what's love? Is it like a relationship where you're like super happy with your relationship?
Or relationship, just like
super in love and you're like, oh my God, it's like a whole other level of emotions.
Well, is there a difference? Wouldn't you ideally want to be in a relationship with someone you super love, or for lack of a better
word? I've been in relationships with like people I super love, and other where I was like, that's fun time. See? But no, yeah, actually, that's a bad thing. You should be in a relationship with someone you super love, not just because it's fun. If it's just fun, you just hook up and, like, you're friends with benefit or something, and that's it. Yeah, I think you can find love. Yeah, you never know. You never know. It's just, it's a way of meeting people. It's not, like, it's not because you met on a dating app that the person is, like, lessened as, like, as a quality or something. It's still a person you can have, like, really good moments with, like, have... connections, similar taste, private jokes, etc. It's just a way of meeting people. You just have to be like straightforward about like what you're looking for. I'm not in the mindset where I want to find the love of my life, so I'm not putting too much effort into that. I'm just like, oh, we hang out, we get along, you're hot, cool, that's it for me. I'm not looking for the specific things. I'm like, oh, this will make a working healthy relationship right now, because it's not what I'm looking for. So
not gonna lie, I always thought I would come to university and immediately meet the one. Turns out that rarely happens in real life, and that's the sort of thing that only happens in movies where 25-year-olds are pretending to be awkward 18-year-olds. It's just, you know, the odds seemed in my favor. Tons of hot people the same age as me. The possibilities did seem endless. But turns out college is more like a playground for those seeking casual sex. And this isn't to say that no one wants a serious relationship, but personally, the prospects haven't been so good. So I brought this up with Eloise.
Yeah, hookup culture, like everybody's about like talking about like hookup culture. Yeah, it has been made easier with like dating apps, but one night stand is not something that is new. It's been there for a while. And once again, it's just like, hooking up is bad when one person in the pair is like, ooh, I want something more than a hookup, see? And that's, once again, you can just dodge that with communication. Hey. But I know it's, like, easier said than done.
Yeah, because sometimes the other person doesn't want to communicate, and it's like, let's have a conversation about it, and they're like, no, I don't want to, and I'm going to ghost you, and I'm like, okay, well,
bye. If you're the person, like, having feelings and they ghost you, first of all, you saved so much time.
That's true.
And if they don't want to communicate and you're not the person like creating feelings, you're like, okay, you're the one getting hurt at the end, I'm not. Like, at some point you have to be like a little bit selfish and be like, if you don't want to communicate, like, I won't talk to a wall.
Do you feel vulnerable on dating apps? And let me explain. For you, because you're mostly looking for hookups, you probably don't have that kind of pressure, but like, mm-hmm. like I think there's this embarrassment, like, oh my god, like I can't find anyone in real, quote unquote, in real life, mm-hmm. and now I have to resort to dating apps. Have you felt anything like that?
Yeah, the embarrassment for sure. It's okay. I mean, I don't feel embarrassed when it stays in the app or like in between the matches, like, you know how you met the person, you know, so there won't be any embarrassment. But like, I remember, like, I met this guy on like Bumble, and like we hang out now, and I met some of his friends, and when I get the famous question like, oh, so how did you met Nanani, I'm like, oh. So one time I just like said straight up Bumble, and I was like, okay, it is accepted, but sounds weird to say, I don't know why. Because yeah, even though I'm like super relaxed with all of that, I'm like, oh, it's kind of like desperate,
the concept of like being desperate, like we all like,
yeah, it's no, yeah, that's it.
Like, we're so like, it's so uncomfortable because like you feel embarrassed and ashamed, and it's like it, I for me, like, it, you know, made me doubt myself because I was just like, am I being too desperate by being on one of these apps?
I mean, technically, you're not desperate. Like, I was not, like, crying myself to sleep because I was not, like, having sex before.
So. I'm not saying I'm crying myself. Before well. We say anything. Oh, my God. Shots fired. Okay, continue.
No, but of course, you have this, like, this... I think, like, people still think this... blah, 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 blah. I think people still see this as desperate, even though we all know it's easier and more convenient to be on dating apps sometimes.
Why do you think it seems more desperate?
Why
do you think people might see dating apps as being more desperate?
I think it kind of like got, it has this kind of stigma now.
There it is again, the S word. So this is a concept that came up a lot in my discussion with Alex. So let's take a listen.
I love talking about stigma. Mm-hmm. Even when you were like, how long have you been on Tinder for? And like a part of me was like, oh, this is embarrassing. Mm. I find the topic of dating and looking for love in whatever capacity that is for whatever person, I find it